Good evening, everybody.
Hello and welcome to Disney Magic Hour, episode number 128. On this week's review, we are going to review A Wrinkle in Time and also give our reactions to the trailers for Mary Poppins Returns and Christopher Robin. To my left, as always, is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Joining us via Skype from the Main Street Gazette is none other than Ryan Wilson. Say hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
And from the Tundra, that's what I refer to it as now, say hello, Courtney.
Hello, Courtney.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. This episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel. For all your vacation planning needs, for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, or traveling anywhere around the globe via Tesser or Umbrella or Honeypot, visit the experts over at meitravel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. Right now, you're listening to There You Are. You can find this track and more over at soundcloud.com/PogoMix. His website is PogoMix.net. We are LastGenPodcast.com. You can find us on the Twitter at DizMagicHourPod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, search Disney Magic Hour. You can find our little group. Add yourself to it. If you're already there, add your friends. You can find this show, however you found it today, is a mystery to me, via iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. So that might have been one of the three ways you did it. Melissa, where can everyone find pictures and the Patreons?
We're on Instagram at Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And if you head over to patreon.com/Disney Magic Hour, you can find ways to support the show there.
Ryan, Main Street Gazette, where can everyone find that?
At mainstgazette.com for the main site. If you're looking for us on Instagram or Twitter, it's mainstgazette. And if you search for Main Street Gazette on Facebook, you can find our page there too.
And Courtney, you're one of the folks that head up this DMH book club. What's that all about?
Well, it's all about reading books, and right now we're reading The Wind in the Willows. We just discussed the first three chapters of the book, and so far it is a pure delight. So if you would like to join us, please come over to Facebook, search for the group. It's DMH Book Club, and we'll add you.
There we are, there you are, there we all are, and here we are on a brisk Sunday morning across the states. On I'll even say the date. It's the 11th of March. Never did that before, and I'll probably never do it again. But good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Morning.
Got a fair amount to talk about this week. We got a big movie to review, a divisive movie, to put it mildly. And then we got a couple of big trailers that came out. More of that live action coming at you forever and ever and ever until you stop going, because it makes a lot of money. That's how this works. I don't know. Hey, Melissa.
Hello.
How you feeling?
Good.
You're going to the Parks of Disney later on today, are you not?
I am.
Where are you going?
I'm probably going to go wander around Epcot a bit.
Epcot.
See some flowers and garden.
As it was once said, Epcot. Flower and garden.
Yes.
Let's take a moment for that.
Okay.
Flower and Garden is really nice. Flower and Garden is the same damn thing it has been for, I said 5 years. Other people have pointed out that it is actually closer to a decade.
Well, no, I'll argue that. Because when we started going together about 12 years ago. There was a time in Flower Garden where there were other topiaries, but they weren't... they were straight up topiaries. Like they didn't have the faces like they do now. And I feel like once they made that switch to the faces, that's when, like you said, everything has stayed the same. Because there used to be Sleeping Beauty and
so
Cinderella
maybe
topiaries.
Like 7 years.
But yeah, it's close to a decade.
Yeah.
But so, yeah. You know I'm nitpicky.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a long story to go into. Not just kidding.
I miss my Sleeping Beauty topiaries.
Are you tired of it? Is it getting stale?
If they didn't add anything new otherwise, I'd say 100%. But they are kind of doing a little couple new things.
Like what?
Well, the new spike scavenger hunt is really cute, where they put the little bee in all the gardens. They have to find them throughout the World Showcase.
I'm going to be honest, it's not grabbing my attention right now.
I think it's cute because it's that old animation of the bee. It's really cute.
Yeah, I mean, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Last year it was, they've done it before. It was Ratatouille.
Well,
no.
That was for Food and Wine.
Yeah, but they did something else the year before.
Well, this year and last year, what they do the eggs, the Easter eggs.
Yeah.
They're still doing that. This is just like on top of it.
Just like the movie It. Easter egg searches should be there. Ryan, let me get your opinion on this.
You know, Flower and Garden is my favorite festival. It has been for I can't tell you how long, but you're absolutely right. I was thinking about this earlier this week, even before you had posted up about it, thinking as long as I've been doing the Gazette, it's been fairly similar. I mean, yes, there have been some topiaries here and there that have changed. Like there were the Muppets for 1 year. We added Cruz Ramirez last year, but as a whole, it feels very, very, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And it does. Like, you know, I want the festival to be what I know it's going to be. I know it's going to be topiaries. I know it's going to be, you know, gardening demonstrations, and I'm going to learn something. But it seems like I'm learning the same things every year right now. Like, you know, we need to mix it up a little bit. You know, there are more characters than just Lady and Tramp that we could put in Italy.
Yeah.
There are more, you know, there's more there that we could pull from that we're not utilizing because it's, you know, it's when you have the topiary that's already established, it's easy to just keep it manicured and then roll it back out when you need to.
Yeah.
I'd like to see them take a little bit more chance and change some things up a little bit more throughout the years. And even if it's just rotating some of them, like, oh, we're going to do this one year and the next year it's this and we'll go back and forth. Fine. But at least make it something a little bit new.
Yeah.
Because when we were walking around, you know, we pointed out like, oh, there's, you know, Pan and Hook. It's like, oh, well, they're not on the roof this year. It's like,
yeah, they moved locations.
So they put less effort into placing them somewhere? Like, it's
right.
Just I don't know. I mean, yes, Melissa, you're right. The bee is new. But that to me, that's not very...
No, I know. It's
that's,
like they're doing small
stuff. It's
nice
for kids. I mean, I'm sure, you know, it's nice. It's a nice little thing, but it's nothing.
There's other gardens like that they've put out. Like the teacups, I think, were... They started last year with the teacups in England. That was kind of cool.
That's been there at least 7 years. I can go back. I went back and looked. Yeah.
But oh, not man. 10.
It may have. I don't. It's somewhere in back in that range. Like you start to lose track when like going through photos, like where you are exactly.
Yeah.
Even though I date all that. But yeah, I don't know. You know, they added more bonsai. They add more things,
yeah.
But it's the same thing.
Add that bonsai. I feel like you were about to say bonsai.
I was going to say bonsai.
Okay.
I like the bonsai. I like the bonsai plant kind of things. Like,
I just want fields of bonsai. That's what I want.
That would be wonderful.
I don't know. Melissa, what would you like to see different? Is it just like, hey, can we change out these topiaries? Or is it a bigger thing? Because we don't go to like the seminars on like, here's how to make a flower. That's how science works. We don't do that.
Yeah, it's hard because like with Festival of the Arts, like there's so much there that you don't have to like pay for or go to the festival center for. So I'd like to maybe have some of that for Flower and Garden out, you know, maybe to where like I don't have to, I don't know, track down a festival center for. Like if you did like, you know, over in that pathway from the land into World Showcase, if you didn't have maybe, I don't know, like the play area there and you did like a gardening demonstration over there.
No, it's a kid's park. I mean, you gotta still... Yeah.
They have the cars part too.
Oh, is that... That's not the one you're referring to? I'm sorry.
No. It's okay. A different one.
All right. Yeah. Ryan?
I'd even love to see... You know, they started with the Festival of the Arts, which we could talk about the fact that they've used the same figment topiary for
mm-hmm.
2 years at both festivals.
Yeah.
But
all the
like
festivals...
The, yeah, yeah. And the paint by number that they've been doing kind of with the Festival of the Arts, you know, those plantings that they do around the, you know, the pathway between Future World and World Showcase, they replant those a couple of times during the festival. Why not make that a plant by number? Like, okay, you have these plants, here are the quadrants where you plant them, and have guests kind of help you make that artwork, that mural of plants throughout, you know, you could do something like that. You could make it a little bit more interactive. You could, I don't know. There are options there that I just don't think are being explored.
Yeah.
Courtney, what do you think? You think you should bring out poppies? Poppies will put you to sleep, I've heard. Just have a field of poppies.
Yes, absolutely. Poppies. I don't know. I mean, as someone who'd never been to the festival before, this was my first time this year. I really enjoyed it. If you're not somebody that's a local and has been a bunch of times, I would recommend for sure that you come and see it. If it is the same as you guys say, which I suspect you are correct in your information, I would tend to agree with you guys. As long as they're adding stuff, I think that's fine. But Disney has a tendency to kind of stick to the same thing that works, especially when it comes to these festivals. So if you haven't been, go. But yeah, I would say it's probably time to mix stuff up.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you've never been, I think if I've never seen it before, I would be like, wow, this is great. Because I remember how I, enjoyed it for a number of years. But now when you walk in, you're like, I've seen this all before. Like, this is just weird. So there's just nothing new to look at. And there's a festival every week. So, that's not something different.
I'd like if, Ryan was saying, they could do, okay, maybe instead of Beauty and the Beast this year, you do another character that's, from France. Or, instead of Lady and the Tramp, maybe put out a Pinocchio,
Pinocchio!
I don't know.
Also, that lady one is weird.
Yeah.
Lady
grassy ears.
Huh?
I like her grassy ears.
Yeah, it's just, a little unkept.
They work better on Mufasa, or I don't know if that's supposed to be Mufasa or Simba, but yeah.
Wait, who?
Over in the African area, they have the Lion King.
Yeah.
So on the adult male lion, they have the grass mane.
Okay. I would assume it's Mufasa just because Simba is in one of the other ones. It'd be weird if Simba was looking at Simba.
Or Simba's looking at his son.
Oh, no one cares about Simba's son.
Well, that's the end of the movie.
Yeah, but no one thinks of that. That's not the scene everyone remembers. I know. When the lion gets picked up, they're like, oh yeah, it's Simba's son. No one says that.
You know, it's also weird though. They have so much detail on Rafiki and the baby lion, and the adult lions are just still the old grass topiaries. There's no eyes or anything put on them.
Yeah, yeah. So
I'll say this: I appreciate the ones that don't have the eyes on. They put the eyes on it. I'm like, that's just plastic you stuck on there, or that's something else. Take that off. Just let it be natural.
Yeah.
Cheating.
Ah, flower and garden, how we love thee and hate thee. Now, hopefully they, change things up.
I do
in the near, yes?
There's one new thing, new food booth that they put in this year.
Food booth.
That is really nice. You know that area that they kind of, create every festival for over near the refreshment port? It's they create this little side thing.
Yes.
And this year it's the honey. Bistro. There it is.
Was it good?
It was very good. And it was a bunch of honey laying around, which I'm sure is great
just
in
on
Florida.
The ground, yeah, just no. Cracked pots of honey.
No, jars. Come on. But no, yeah, it was very good. I got the flatbread. It was very good. But yeah, it's a cute little area. I'm glad they're doing something else there.
Do you remember what was specifically on the flatbread?
It was a chicken tandoori, honey chicken tandoori flatbread.
Oh, wait, I had a piece of that.
Yes, you did.
It was good.
Yes,
it was good. I liked it. All right, let's move on. Unless anyone has any final words on bees and honey. Oh, wait a minute. Oh. Segway. The Christopher Robin trailer came out.
Yay.
With a day's notice, pretty much. And this is a new movie coming out in November. I believe in November is the...
August,
the,
I think. August,
August
3rd?
Now?
I thought it was August 3rd.
Very well. August. Good. Put everything out. And this got a lot of people in it. We got Ewan McGregor. Hayley Atwell is in it for a hot second in this movie. Looking hot for that second. And then we have a voice cast, which we'll get to in a moment. But the Christopher Robin trailer dropped, and it's oh, God damn it, it's adorable. It might be the most adorable thing that Disney has done in a long time.
Yeah, I can't think of another one off the top of my head real quick.
I can't either. Let's not try to think of one either, because then we'll get sidetracked into that conversation. But what, Melissa, what did you think of the trailer? I mean, it's a teaser. It just shows you, basically our main players, as it were. What did you think?
I loved it. I love the way they're animating Pooh. I want a stuffed animal of that, tomorrow.
Yeah, I like that look. I love that look. The it's slightly, you know, aged too. Mm-hmm. You know, the color on the nose is not as sharp as it would be. If you look at the paws really close,
they're like a little frayed.
Little bit of wear and tear on them. Absolutely loved the look of this. Courtney, you saw the trailer as well, right?
I did. Yeah, I did. He looks like the little stuffy at the beginning of the feature film we just watched. That's what it's like. He's adorable. As soon as I heard his voice, I lost it completely, and I was just in pieces. Everybody in the theater was like, "Oh, cute moment."
What, Ryan? What is it about Pooh Bear that gives everyone that reaction? Because that was my reaction too.
Yeah, I don't know. Like for the longest time, we'll say in my 20s when I was like, oh, Pooh Bear is no, thank you. Like, I don't need Pooh Bear. Yeah, everyone needs Pooh Bear in their life somehow for some reason. I don't know what it is, if it's that voice, if it's just like the charm of like, you know, the kind of like always in the right place, but in saying the right thing, but not knowing how and why he does it. But yeah, like it was, you know, the second thing when he's talking to Christopher Robin, when, you know, about the cracks and the wrinkles, yeah. I was like, screw you, Pooh. I don't need this. But it did. It hit. You know, it's a gut punch for sure.
And of course, we got Jim Cummings voicing Winnie the Pooh, which he has done before many a times. And I think it is something about the voice. There's just something that Sterling Holloway.
Mm-hmm.
I almost said Hollowell.
No.
That's not correct. It's not a thing. Yeah. I don't know. There's just something about that voice. But that animation is really something. I think it was good that they didn't try to make a real quote unquote looking bear the way that a Paddington doesn't look real, but it looks like a real-ish bear. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is just totally going in the stuffed animal direction, which I think is the right way to go about it. Just to give you some idea on the rest of the cast, just because I think this is Chris O'Dowd is Tigger. Chris O'Dowd is, you know, I don't think of Tigger when I think of Chris O'Dowd. He's funny as all hell, though. So I'm curious, is he going to be doing a classic Tigger voice? Because I don't know.
I don't know how you don't, though.
That's the thing, yeah. Like, how do you not? But then I hear, oh, no, I guess he has the right range. It's the right tenor of his voice. I'm really curious as to how that's going to go. I'm looking forward to that. Toby Jones's owl just makes sense.
Yeah.
I will picture that Toby Jones dressed as owl for all of the recording sessions, and that makes total perfect sense. Capaldi as a coked up rabbit is exactly what I want. I just want one movie where I don't want to murder rabbit, though. I really hate that character. Like, I think you're supposed to hate that character, and I hate that character. Rabbit is an ass. He's such a racist, xenophobic, just monster. It really is. And then Brett Garrett is Eeyore, which, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Duh. I mean, like, that's just, yeah. But Ewan McGregor he just looks like he fits perfectly in the role. I think this movie got a lot of people, it got a lot of people excited who had no interest in this movie 4 or 5 days ago.
Yeah,
when go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna say, like, when we had done our 2018 like preview, we were like, yeah, I think there's a Christopher Robin one coming out. Like, we said, like, maybe this will be a thing. Like, we were even really unsure, and now I think we're all on board 100%.
Ryan, I'm sorry.
No, and absolutely, and putting Mark Gatiss in there as like the bot, just being Mark Gatiss, like, that was wonderful. Like, that's gonna just add another layer to this.
Yeah, he's basically the the banker in Poppins.
Yeah.
What's his name? Mm-hmm. Help me. What's his name? Banker. Old banker man.
Yep.
Dick Van Dyke.
This was my segue, and I botched it.
And none of us,
Dawes,
none of us came through.
Dawes? Is that his name?
Dawes. Yes, Dawes.
Boom. All right. So on that note, wow. We had another trailer come out this week, and it didn't have as much in it, but it was longer. Strange. The Mary Poppins Returns trailer fell out of the sky. Aww. Mm. So here we go. Mary Poppins Returns. I would say one of the... it's not the largest release that Disney has left, but I think it is the one that will have the most eyes on it past Avengers, I think that's pretty easy to say, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What would be the other one? Ant-Man and Wasp.
Oh, well,
I love it, but I mean, it's bigger than it's going to be a bigger thing than Incredibles.
Wreck-It Ralph.
No, so Mary Poppins. I would say Mary Poppins is the one right behind it. So Emily Blunt is Mary Poppins. We actually got to see and hear from her in this trailer, which was nice. A nice little nod to the first, mm-hmm. with the, you know, speaking to the reflection and the reflection sort of looking back as the abyss does when you stare into it. We see a quick shot of Ben Whishaw as Michael Banks and Emily Mortimer as Jane. They look really good. Ben Whishaw looks awesome.
Yeah.
He looks like Michael should look when he grew up. I don't know why. I was just like, yeah, that looks really good. And we see Lin-Manuel Miranda as Jack. We haven't heard from him yet. That is my biggest question mark. I think, Courtney, I think you agree with me on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what if he does like an accent or something?
No. Go ahead, Courtney.
If he can translate the stage acting to the screen acting, I think just hearing how he speaks is going to be a good indication of whether or not that's going to play. So, yeah, maybe they're keeping him silent on purpose. That makes me a little nervous.
It's a teaser. I mean,
he really talked. So, like, to be fair, it's fine. I just am nervous.
Yeah, I would. That'll be the biggest question mark for me going into the movie is how does he do? Is there an accent? I feel like there's going to be an accent. I don't know why, but I feel like there's going to be an accent. So I'm okay with that. This looks it looks great, Melissa. What do you think? I mean, visually, it looks right.
Yeah, visually, it looks very like, you know, like the gusty, windy, you know, rainy, like very much the same as the intro to the original Poppins. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. You don't seem as enamored as you were with the Winnie the Pooh trailer.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
I don't really think there's enough to go on to be like, this doesn't look good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a teaser. It just comes out of the sky.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it looks good. I'm just like, yeah, I'm interested in it, but
okay.
I don't know. There was more to Pooh for the emotions.
Yes. This wasn't like an emotional punch button for me. Was it for you, Ryan?
No, it wasn't, but it was enough to get me interested, you know, to keep me interested and wanting to see more. And as you were alluding to earlier, this is going to have a lot of eyes on it and a lot of scrutiny on it because of where Mary Poppins sits in our cultural lexicon. So it'll be interesting. You know, Emily Blunt, you know, holds herself with the same, you know, like dignity that you would expect of Mary Poppins to have. It's, you know, there are a lot of pieces in play. Yeah, you're right. Jane and Michael look great. And I think for Michael especially, he looks like a blend of what he looked like as a child and his father. Mm-hmm. So you kind of like that's where that blend comes in. You're like, yes, that's exactly what that should look like. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. London looks a little bit, you know, less bright. It looked a little dingier, you know. So we'll see where we go. But I'm definitely interested in it.
What was the other thing I wanted to bring up? Arg. Oh, the director, Rob Marshall. Kind of a 50-50 in my book. Usually with his stuff, so I'm hoping that he does well with this.
What else has he done?
Chicago, but then he also did Nine, and he did Into the Woods, or AKA Into the Woods, as I believe you have to say it.
Okay,
a little bit.
Yeah. Something I'm just reading now, Ryan. I want to bring this up to you. Do you know who's playing Admiral Boone? Boom.
In this one?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I haven't looked at the cast list.
David Warner.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, right?
Yep.
Who's your user program? Yeah, David Warner is Admiral Boom. That works out brilliantly.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, actually, I'm kind of amazed. I maybe thought David Warner was dead.
Oh, no, I was talking about Admiral Boom.
No. Well,
I was going to ask that question, actually. Like, I was just thinking, is there going to be an Admiral Boom? Is it going to be a son? Or, like, how's that going to work out?
Son of Boom.
I mean,
I want that movie.
Kind of old.
Yeah.
David Warner was born in 1941. So what do we got there? 59 years plus 18.
I'm worried about Admiral Boone.
Boone. Well, I mean, if you think about it, timeline of the movie, we've only jumped maybe 20 years-ish. So he was in his, he had just, you know, he could be, he'll, I mean, he'd be in his 80s, I would assume. But
yeah.
Yeah, but he's playing with cannons. I mean, really.
He's fine.
We're going to be speaking with an 80-year-old this week, almost 90-year-old this week, and he's going to be doing just fine.
He'll be just fine. Everyone's going to be just fine. Speaking of things that are under large scrutiny, let's get to the main review of this week. Ba-ba-da-ba! A Wrinkle in Time came out this week, guys.
It did.
This is the new film by Ava DuVernay. And it is an adaptation of Laura Ingalls' A Wrinkle in
Time. No, what? Madeline. Madeline.
I just wanted to get in that joke. It's okay.
I don't understand the joke, so...
Who doesn't know who Laura Ingalls is? What's wrong with you?
I don't know.
You don't know who Pa Ingalls is?
Who?
An amazing hair. Wrinkle in Time. He really did, though. Michael Landon's hair...
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Was a thing amongst things in the world.
Yeah.
It was coiffed, it was poofed, it was beautiful. No one during that time had hair that good. No one. Wrinkle in Time came out. I will say two very mixed reviews thus far, but we're going to give our reviews on this film. I know that Melissa and Courtney, you guys obviously headed up the book version. The review that we did with DMH Book Club for Wrinkle in Time. I will say a review that many people did not like. Not that they didn't like your review. Many of the people who read the book, not enamored with it. The way that this book is kind of held in very, very high regard. Yeah. But we're not reviewing the book today. We're not going to get into that. I also would... I mean, like, it's going to happen anyway, but... I think it's a pitfall to then say, like, well, this happened in the book and this happens in the movie. Because this is the movie, it's supposed to just kind of facilitate on its own. That's where, like, someone like me comes into the picture and I go see the movie. I know that's very hard to do when you're watching it, though. But, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm not going to, if you have something you want to bring up, of course, bring it up. But let's start with our thoughts on Wrinkle in Time. Who wants to go first on this one? Hands up. Hands up? I'll pick somebody if no one raises their hand.
Baby, hands up.
All right. Ryan, how about you guys going?
I knew that was what was coming.
Yeah.
Two of us did the book review, and I was like, oh, I'm the only one who's been silent on this for a while. This was one of the movies I was really looking forward to this year because I had such a love of it as a child. In my view of it, there are things that I was hopeful to see. And again, like you said, it's a movie version of it. It's not going to be a straight page for page adaptation, which I don't want it to be. There were things I was looking for. There were some things that I think would have made it make a little bit more sense. But overall, it was spectacular. I mean, really, it was. It gives a wonderful message. There are some things I could nitpick, and I will nitpick when we can. But I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I thoroughly thought it was a great refresh of the source material. And I really thought it does stand up. I think that there are a lot of people who want to pick it apart But I don't necessarily think that that's the way to go with this. I think there's a lot of really positive things to this movie that keep it up there and hold it up.
Yeah, I'm just going to – on that note, we're not going to get into this, but – as soon as I've read a couple of reviews, and if you open with how much you dislike Oprah Winfrey, I'm not reading the rest of your review because that's all it was. You went in there just wanting to hate it for whatever stupid reason. I don't know. I guess because she didn't give you a free car. I don't know. but yeah, like that just completely invalidates any actual opinion that might count as soon as you do that. Or if you open up your review with, I guess we had to have diversity. It's like, okay, I don't know how skin color changes a plot, but sure. In this, you know, setting, this isn't one of those movies. Anyways, childish. Courtney, what do you think? What did you think about this film as a film?
I liked it. I liked it overall. Like Ryan said, there are some things that I didn't particularly enjoy just from a film perspective, but visually it was great. I think that it appeals to exactly who it was trying to appeal to, and in a really positive way. So, yeah, overall, I really liked it. I think the biggest takeaway from the film is the message and the visuals, both of which were communicated really, really well.
Yeah, I'll say right now, I went to the movies last night to see Thoroughbreds, which was really, it was good. It was a cool first film, starring one hell of a cast. But on the way out, A Wrinkle in Time evidently broke at the same time. And there was a line of children, like groups of kids with their parents, who were waiting to then take a photo in front of the standee as on their way out. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's definitely hitting with that crowd. They're not going to make a lot of money on this movie. They're probably going to make a massive loss, as a matter of fact. But it seems to be hitting pretty well with that crowd, like you were saying, Courtney. I think that the movie's working on that edge. I have a number of things that don't make sense to me. And things that I wish were a little different in the film, but we'll get into that later. Melissa, I know you really enjoyed this. To say the book, you enjoyed this much, much more than you did the book.
Yeah, I think the themes that the movie highlighted were clearer versions of what was trying to be shown in the book. We talked about it in the book review, like she got really caught up in certain things and I don't feel like she did the character development very well. In the movie, I felt the characters were much, much better in their arcs, in their development, in their portrayals. I loved how they, you know, showed you the characters and the visuals overall, just the worlds, all of them, the characters, you know, costumes. I liked all of it. So yeah, I'm very high on this film.
I enjoyed it. I think it's really good. I think there's some spots that are really good, but I think there's some issues. There are some issues here. Melissa, I'll disagree with you in the performances thing. I think that there are some really good performances, and I think there are some really bad ones. And for me particularly, okay, I guess let me go about it this way. Remember there was a moment in the film where I leaned over to you and I said, you know what, this is doing a lot of the things right that Tomorrowland did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem though with that comparison though is that the things that they did right in Tomorrowland were the performances, and I don't think that they hit there, in particular the Charles Wallace character. This character kind of, it was always on the teetering edge of like, ugh. And comparing that to like other children of that age performances in fantasy films, you know, we could look at a number of them. But I mean, like Athena is a pretty good, you know, one-to-one over there with Tomorrowland. I also, you know, young kid who's supposed to be intimidating, I guess, without getting too far into it. I think of Pierce Gagnon in Looper, who is the young boy Sid.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I just wasn't very high on. He's a young kid. I mean, look, he's being asked to do a lot, in my opinion, in this movie. Derek McCabe is being asked to have sort of a large range for someone so young. And I don't think it works. And I don't think it works specifically in the time where it's supposed to work the most. Which, again, I don't want to get into teasers. I don't want to get into spoilers or anything. But that was, you know, something that really stuck out to me. And same with the character of Calvin. So I wanted to ask you, I guess I do want to ask. He doesn't really do anything in this movie. He just sort of stares at Meg.
Yep.
Kind of creepily.
Yep.
And like just comments her. I did think it was kind of funny. Like all he does there is sort of, he's just around to kind of compliment the girl character. And I was like, you know what? They did this with girl characters to boy characters for a long time in movies, and it didn't work then, and I don't think it doesn't work now. Did he have a larger? I guess I'm going to break my own rule. Did he have a larger purpose in the book? Why is this kid here?
That was our question, also.
Oh, really? Okay, all right. So I'm not out of my mind by thinking like I don't know what this guy's doing here.
No,
he's useless.
They do that in the book. They do that. They do that with Meg. They do that with Calvin. Really, Charles Wallace in the book is like the crux of it. He's like portrayed as this big special kid who like, you know, like that whole scene, like when he was having sandwiches downstairs, like that was kind of where you get introduced to the fact that like maybe he's special. He knows more, you know, than many of the people around him, even though he's so young. You know, like he was the big crux of the book where it was like, you know, what is his deal? the angle never gives you any payoff on that, which is frustrating. Yeah. And then, yeah, the whole thing with, like, you know, Calvin, they even mentioned in the movie, like, he's really good at communication. But then, like, even in the book, how?
Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. Like, you can tell me. You can, you know, there's a rule. Show, don't tell.
Yeah.
And they kind of break that rule a lot in this movie, in my opinion. I hate saying, like, in my opinion constantly, because obviously it's my opinion. But I genuinely think that they dropped the ball on that a number of times.
I think it was the source material also. Like, I think they did a really good job of adapting the material to the screenplay. I think they cleaned it up a lot. But I do think, just, you know, based off of what was in the book, like, it's the same thing. Like, I don't know why Calvin's there. In the book, it was even worse. Like, I did not get, like, the whole Meg's faults being, you know, gifts thing. Like,
I have no idea.
That was the weirdest thing that we ever read, and I was like, I don't get it.
All right, so to take that moment, Ryan, I want to kind of how do I do that? You know what? We'll.
Yeah, that's good. That's good to get.
We'll do a little spoiler thing at the end. We'll get into that part, because there's a moment. You know what? This isn't a spoiler. This is every movie with, you know, a protagonist, pretty much, where somewhere near the end they realize, like, oh, I've had the power all the time. Like, that happens all the time. Rey in Force Awakens, when, you know, they're having the lightsaber fight with Kylo, and he's like, you need a teacher. You know, a teacher always has a force. And she's like, the force. And then it all just, you know, all coming back to me now. And then, like, she's able to whoop some arse, you know? So there's that moment, you know, I know Kung Fu. Like, but we then see what they do. Like, you know, Rey understands, like, okay, if I sort of accept this and I let this happen, I'm going to be able to control myself a little better and, you know, get rid of this dude. In The Matrix, you see him. He can now see the code of The Matrix, you know? In this, it kind of comes off as, like, tentacle monster slaps her around a little bit. I have faults. And then the movie kind of wraps up. And I was like, I don't know what the hell you just did. And yeah. I think Storm Reid is phenomenal in this. I think she's absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
She is definitely the brightest spot in this film, like, without question. I would say maybe Reese Witherspoon is right behind her. There's another series of questions I have to ask. You know what? We do have to talk about this book, because I don't know what the hell this movie's about. Yeah. So I just didn't understand it. Like, I literally just had no idea what happened.
Yeah. Nope. Same.
Yeah. I mean, and okay. Even in the book, it's a little bit, it happens differently in the book than it does here. And there's, you know, and there's even more development of, and I'm trying to figure out how it is, of Charles Wallace towards the end, where there's a definite choice he makes that changes things, but that's never, like, that's not really how it's shown here. Like, it's not it does. It comes off almost as one note, because you're kind of lost in this battle, and, you know, you're like, okay, what is, yeah, I have this, and how does that work? So it's kind of, it's a lost kind of a thing. Like, it is kind of getting lost in translation of the visuals. It's like, we have these big things we want to show, but the smaller element, the story element, kind of flounders there.
Because I want to point out, like, one of my favorite movies of all time kind of has a moment like this where things wrap up and you're like, well, I don't really understand what the hell just happened. And it's a never-ending story. Which you can write a lot of lines. That movie concludes with a boy shouting an unexplainable word into the storm. Man, it just kind of works. Because he names the nothing. Because he gives it like I have no idea what the hell happens in that scene. But that movie's great. So I don't think that, like, this is a moment that kills the movie. It's just, it's little moments like this, though, that I do think harm the overall delivery.
Yeah, I also feel like if it's being tailored to children, like, it might work a bit better, because in the book, I think the development of Charles Wallace and stuff could be a little bit more heady for children, you know? So, like, if you're caught by the fact that your audience is supposed to be younger, like maybe you don't go in that direction so much. But I do think it then kind of gets like what you were saying, like that development of like, wait, what? Like, how does this work?
But yeah.
It was the same in the book.
Let me tell you, no one had that concern when they made The Secret of Nim.
Well.
They're like, nope, we're making the movie we want to make and everyone's going to get it.
I think you're absolutely right, though, Melissa. Like, I actually was reading, you know, I know a couple of people in the thread in the book club read this to their kids, and their kids kind of got lost in it as well. But I actually talked to a couple of people this week who are teachers, and they had their kids reading it in class, and they love it. And they've been rereading it as an adult, and they're not understanding pieces. They're like, I don't like it as much as I did when I was a kid. And I think it's they told the story, very simply, or the book is very simple. The kids understand, yeah, okay, that's just a kid, fine. I don't have to know character development for them. I just know that's who they are. And that's why, and the kids don't look past that point. And that is their enjoyment coming from there. Whereas in the movie, it's like, yeah, but I need more than just that there's a kid here for no reason.
Yeah.
So I think that, Ryan, you're kind of going into a thing that I think is a larger problem with films nowadays. Because a lot of these films now, they're like, hey, we're going to tap into your nostalgia. But we're going to ask you to have the same sensibilities and free, willingness as when you watch the movie as a kid now.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's not going to happen because I'm not going to read it the same way as I was a kid. And it's going to be even harder because if I liked that thing a lot as a kid, I have already mentally accepted all those faults and it never even was a fault to me. So that thing is perfect in my child memory of it, of my mind. And it was like the most imaginative thing because I was so young. And now you put this in front of me and it's not as imaginative. Guess what? Nothing's going to be as imaginative as the inner thoughts of a 7 to 10-year-old. It's never going to happen. It's not going to happen on screen. You know, Melissa, you look confused.
Yeah, because no? I don't think this movie was meant to
be imaginative.
No. I don't think it was meant to like pull you in based on nostalgia. I just think it was.
No, I'm sorry. Let me reframe.
Okay.
It doesn't matter if the movie is intending that. They're using as their source material an item that is already nostalgia for hundreds of thousands of people. So like it's baked in. It's not up to them. You know, you don't agree with that.
No.
So you don't think people have nostalgia about A Wrinkle in Time?
I don't.
You should read some reviews.
I don't know if that was DuVernay's intention, though. Like, oh,
I don't think it was at all. That's what I said. I don't think that's her intention at all. But it doesn't matter because it's already there.
All right.
You know, I don't.
Something comes from an existing source. That is something that a lot of people identify with, regardless of what your intention is. There has to be an awareness that there's going to be a nostalgia portion involved.
And I think you can ignore that nostalgia. That's totally fine. Like, that's your right as a filmmaker. But you're still going to get judged by those people on their nostalgia because they're not going to let it go. And I'm not saying that's right or that's wrong. Actually, I'm kind of saying that's wrong. Like, you have to, like, at a certain point, just sort of let go of certain things, Star Wars just went through this whole thing just a couple of months ago. So Courtney, I have a question for you.
Okay.
The misses.
Yes.
Outside of Reese Witherspoon, what the hell do these women do?
So that's not made clear at all in the film. It's not made clear at all. And in fact, in the book, each of them has like moments where they do something very purposeful and meaningful.
Okay.
But that's not portrayed in the movie at all. The way that they portrayed Mrs. Witch, the way that they portrayed Oprah was like her in the book. She's kind of like the leader of the group, I guess. She's like the big wig.
She's and the way the oldest
they,
too.
Right. And the way that they portrayed it in the movie was they made her large. To me, like I read that as
that's not in the book?
No, because see in the book, her imagery is that like she's almost like translucent. She's almost like beyond the point of materializing. That's why like Mrs. What's It says, like, I was chosen because of my ability to materialize and to speak.
Right. So they showed her a ton. They showed Oprah a ton in this movie, which I was not expecting. I was expecting her to be kind of like in the veil sort of thing. And instead, they made her the like the presence that she's supposed to be in the book. They did that by making her huge. Mm. They just made this big, huge visual character. And I thought that was an absolutely bizarre way to portray her based on what her character was in the book.
I thought was kind of the Obi-Wan in this movie, I guess that's not really it.
She kind of is. She kind of is the Obi-Wan, but it's just weird the way that they displayed her abilities, because in a way, I don't know that they showed her abilities.
I don't know what her abilities are. As a watcher of the movie, I have no idea.
Well, I thought her size as like she's so far beyond what everything is that she doesn't get the whole like size relativity.
You're right.
Sorry, but so like that I thought was just like a funny thing, because like when they eventually get to a different location, like she does scale down,
right?
So I just took it as like, you know, it would be like the same thing as like if she materialized as a cat and been like a talking cat, like, well, why can't I be a talking cat? Like, she doesn't get that, like, you know,
because then it's just Kiki's secret magical delivery.
I think the lack of explanation of like what her abilities are and what she's capable of doing, to me, the choice to make her big then was kind of like taking the place of that, I guess. I mean, I understand the her not caring about size or like it, like that doesn't matter because she's, you know, millions of years old, whatever, that, you know, that all makes sense too. But the lack of explanation of what she actually does and can do, I think, I don't know, in a way, I guess making her large to me was like their way of describing how important she was, I guess.
Yeah, because I got Reese Witherspoon like turning into luff dragons like by leaves and all this stuff, and then
not how she looks.
Mindy Kaling has nothing to do.
That was the same in the book. Actually, I think Mindy Kaling's character in the movie is so much better than Mrs. Who in the book.
What the hell is she doing in the
book? Mrs. Who in the book, she doesn't
have. What is it exactly that you do here?
Yeah, she doesn't.
Like, was my question to her during most of the movie.
Well, like, the thing is, like, she doesn't have her own words. I guess she's forgotten, like, how to use her own words, so she quotes other people.
Honey, I could have a conversation with you right now doing only that. I can do that. That's
all she is in the book. Like, she
what
has.
What does that mean then?
She like, has some moments where she has like a good quote and like it's kind of meaningful to the characters, but like that's all she does.
She's the bumblebee of this movie. That's who she is.
I thought you were going to go more with the butterfly from Last Unicorn, which he seems to have a bit much bigger impact on the plot than she does. There was a lot of Last Unicornish that, let me just say, you want to know what moment is absolutely phenomenal in this movie? The moment where a Sade song is playing. Chris Pine is really good in this. Mm. He's really good at what he does. I think he's really growing into himself as an actor. If you haven't seen Hell or High Water, you really, really should see Hell or High Water. But there are some moments where this movie really, really works. But there's a lot of it where I legitimately just don't know what happened. I enjoyed it. Like, I was like, oh, this is really nice looking and this and that. But as I got like further away from it, if you asked me what happened, I don't know. I can't answer a lot of it. And I don't have any attachment to the book. So I like, it's weird to hear these changes. There are some kind of head scratching changes. I think you could have scrapped Calvin from the movie completely.
Yeah, I think
change I would have been behind.
The center of the movie, and I think this is probably why Calvin's there, is that, you know, it's centered around this girl, Meg, who is in a very, you know, odd place in her life. You know, she's got a lot of stuff going on with her family. You know, she lost her father. There's a lot of rumors going around about where her father actually is. You know, she has a hard time with school now because people make fun of her. She's, you know, the nerd. She doesn't have a lot of self-confidence. So, like, there's all this stuff that for, like, a young girl, or if you've ever been a young girl, like, you can relate with. The whole movie – yeah, I'm sure. The whole movie is her journey into self-acceptance and learning to love herself as she is and seeing herself as other people see her, you know?
Yeah. And so, what's great about that is that young boys go through the same thing. So they can also relate. It's good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. If you've ever been young, I'm sure you can relate to the point where you know, that you didn't fit in some way. And like, this is not necessarily about being perfect to fit in. It's just about accepting yourself as you are. And that's kind of where that end part comes in, when you're like, I don't get what happened. It's like, she finally figured out that all the things that she maybe tries to repress about herself or that she hates about herself, they're not necessarily things to be shameful of or to be repressed. Like, embrace them, love them, because in some shape, way, or form, they're going to help you in some way. You know, so if you're very stubborn, like, in some way, that'll eventually help you. Maybe it helps you later down the line. That you get into college. You,
hasn't helped me at all.
You persist at something, like, your stubbornness maybe will become the thing that, you know, maybe it doesn't let you step away from something and you keep pursuing it, you know. But in when you're 12 years old, that stubbornness is seen as a fault. So I think that's where, like, the movie is. It's a very simple, you know, message. I think that message kind of got convoluted in the book between this greater battle between light and dark that they try and bring in. And I don't think that anything winds up being clear in the book, whereas in the movie, they kind of stripped a lot away and was like, you know what? Yeah, there's the battle between light and dark, but the way to win battles, whether physically or internally, is you need to embrace yourself.
Ryan, I have a question for you towards the It, which I mean, I don't know. For all I know, that's where Stephen King kind of took the name. And I also think that, to again, draw a very, very direct parallel to the Nothing of the Neverending Story. In the Neverending Story with the Nothing, I see the effects of the Nothing as greater than just, like, people being people. Because I kind of feel like that was the example they gave us in this film. It was like, the It makes people act like people. I just never... I don't know. I guess it didn't... It just didn't seem as big a threat to me as other ideas of this have been set up as threats in other movies. The visual of it was cool. You know, the dark spot in the sky that's expanding. You know, it looked great. But then in the actual manifestation of it, I remember I didn't know the reference, Melissa, when you put up a picture of it. But you guys must have gotten to the end of the book, and Melissa put up a photo of an episode of Futurama.
Yep.
With floating brains, and
that's
I was
how
like,
described in the book.
And I remember seeing that, and I was like, well, that's a thing. and then watching the end of the movie, and Melissa telling me like how it is in the book, I was like, Jesus Christ. Well, they couldn't have gone that way. So that's fine. But there's something about the intangibleness of the It. It's almost a little too intangible. Like, it doesn't do anything. It didn't worry me at all. Because I was like, well, people are assholes. I don't know. Like, that's sort of
just
how
things. But I think that's
is.
The whole thing. It's like, people are mean or whatever because of the dark influence.
Yeah, and they just did that in Wonder Woman. And I didn't think it worked very well in Wonder Woman either. You know, where it was like, all of a sudden, all the World War One Germans are like, we're friends now. It's a little weird. You know, just thinking like, it's not actual people who need to improve. They're really good souls that are just being taken over by a darkness. I guess that's just me being very cynical. But like, Ryan, did it work the same way in the novel? And did you find that it was effective at all in the film?
So that's a multi. Let's see how I want to go about this. So yeah, so when you're looking about it from the, you know, from the book and from the movie, it's, you know, really what it's a planet that this darkness has taken over and it's spreading from, which doesn't really come across as clearly in this in the movie. I don't think is what it does in the book. But you know, I'm going from memory. That's at least probably 12 to 15 years old since the last time I've read it. But I think it goes back to what you're talking about, the imagination you have as a child, that you're able to, you know, understand it a little bit easier. To me, it was always just, you know, the world, you know, half the world's already been plunged into darkness, and there are these figures of hope that are, you know, that are fighting through hope. So to me, it was always like, people are, you know, it's where do you govern your life from? You know, are you governing it from a place of hope? Because you're going to make mistakes, and you're going to be a jerk to someone somewhere. But are you governing from a place of hope, or are you governing from a place of selfishness? That almost like that mentality in the book, that's how I always, but again, that was my 10-year-old, 12-year-old, 15-year-old, whatever version of it. It was governing. It was from where you were as a child, you know, where you were running your life from. Whereas here that's not as clear. It's, you know, yes, we see people who are jealous. We see people who are fighting their own battles. You know, it's almost like, you know, on any given day, everyone's a warrior. Because we're all fighting our own battles, whether we know it or not, against the darkness. but it's more intangible in the movie than I felt like it was in my understanding of it as a child. If that makes any sense.
No, that does. Cordy, did you feel the same way, or did it work a little better for you in the film version?
Well, it didn't work better for me in the film version at all. I mean, in the book, you get a lot more explanation of what the actual darkness is and what it actually is. And the way they do it in the film, I mean, they combine two things in the film that are two very separate things. So the planet itself is Kamazots. It is the brain. So it is the thing that's controlling all the people. So okay.
And then the dark thing was a separate thing also.
It was a totally separate thing. The black thing is a totally separate thing. Yeah. So there's different things that they've combined into one thing. And the way that they do it in the book, the only instance that you get of what it actually is capable of is when they get to Kamazots and you see the neighborhood with the kids bouncing the balls and the moms calling the kids in. That's the only time that you get an indication of the mind control portion of it.
I liked that scene. Mm-hmm. I would have liked more of that. I'm sorry. Continue. Yeah. Yes.
That part of it was awesome. And I was glad that they brought that visual in from the book. But aside from all the crap that happens with Charles Wallace later, that's the only indication you get of what you're about to get yourselves into.
Yeah. So there's no escalation to that moment. It just sort of like pops in.
Well, and I think that's part of the complaint about the child who played Charles Wallace. I don't think there was a good way for him to be directed to act, because the source material was pretty much the same way. It was like he very quickly makes a transition the same way he does in the movie. And then there's no real explanation it's very simple the way he gets into and out of the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. It happens very instantaneously. And I liked Michael Peña's Red. Mm-hmm. That character I thought was really nice. I thought that scene was really great, the way it's laid out. But yeah, just sort of like on a dime, it's just like, oh, all right, I guess that's the way. There's also, and I think I asked Melissa this, I guess this is kind of spoilery also.
We'll spoilery thing already.
Yeah. You know what, guys, if you haven't seen it, we're going to talk a little bit about the details going into it. Is it a bad choice that, you know, we finally meet, guess what, Chris Pine, you know, is found. I mean, which is a great, that's actually, in my opinion, that's the best scene. When Chris Pine is found, mm-hmm. and the music kicks in, I just think that's absolutely phenomenal, beat for beat phenomenal. Then he just sort of like abandons her. Makes him look like a real dick.
Yeah.
Which I don't think that was the intention.
It actually works better in the movie than it does in the book.
He's a bigger dick in the book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not right.
Nope.
And
no,
so
he's more clinical in the book. He's much more like that scientist, like A plus B equals C. Like, that's it.
Yeah. And what my big problem with the book was, and I'm glad they changed it in the movie, like in the book, it's very Tomorrowland. Like, he's a scientist and he is actually working for the government, and they had someone who already tessered and like didn't come back for a year, and then he decides to do the same thing. So it's like, okay, so you are like legit deciding to leave your family. Whereas in the movie, they do it in such a different way that it's actually more heartwarming in a way. You know?
Yeah. No, it's just that moment in particular was like, okay, if that's a choice he makes, it's because he knows that to help them, he has to do something else.
Well, see, like,
so then you should show me him doing that something else, because in my mind, him and Calvin are just kind of hanging out in the yard for like a solid 10 to 15 minutes.
Well, because in the book, they're hanging out in a different planet.
Yeah.
So.
See, that makes a lot more sense. Like, if they get, you know, if they kind of get like Thor and Loki'd, you know, off to a different place and they have to figure out, like, that makes more sense, because I agreed with him at the time. It was like, look, we can't help him right now. We got to figure this out, and then we can come back and we can do something. And I was like, that sounds like a logical plan. But then they never have him come back.
Yeah. Well, see, and the thing in the book is like, Meg does go with him to that other planet. But here, like, again, like, it's her will, her strong will or whatever, to stay and help her brother, which in the book, all she's doing while they're on that other planet is whining and crying about how they abandoned her brother. So it actually works a little bit better.
You know, I don't need to hear that.
Yeah, no.
I definitely don't need to hear that at all.
So I guess the whole point in the movie is just like, you know what? Yeah, he wants to do something else because maybe adult, being an adult, being a scientist, like he's like, no, we have to analyze the problem and figure out how to do it. And she's like this kid headstrong, like, no, like I just need to fix this now. So.
And that works. Yeah. I mean, that works. It's but, just that we don't get that. He just sort of, you know, bails, which is weird.
Mm-hmm.
Because just it makes him seem very, very unworthy of the effort that was just put forth and all this kind of stuff. And outside of that, I really liked that character. You know, I liked the way that Pine plays it. I like Chris Pine.
I think the hard thing is like with also, the it
when you
and
said,
everything.
I have to get this out of my head. When okay. you said scientist, I thought of The Simpsons where it's like, hey, someone's coming over, Homer. And he's like, is it Batman? She's like, no, it's a scientist. Like, Batman's a scientist. So
very nice. It's like a
Can't help it.
I think the hard thing with the it and the hard thing like that they have in the movie, which is, you know, what's the danger? Because it's so cerebral that and it's yeah. hard to nail down what the actual threat is. Like Charles Wallace doesn't come across maybe as a threat or being under a threat. Like there's not necessarily this concrete like this is the problem. Like in the book, it's a little bit more tangible as to why losing Charles Wallace to the it is a big deal.
Good point.
So like having that kind of be very vague in the movie and be and you know it all being like this mental battle, it does come across as like, okay, well then also like why does father just leave? Like why does he like get out of there, you know, and what is really going on with Charles Wallace and Meg? So I think that's the bigger problem.
I'm going to admit right now, when we first met Calvin, I was like, is this a younger Chris Pine? Is that what we're getting into? Like, is it Chris Pine as a young boy or it's his son down the line or something? Because there's a scene, there's a shot in particular where he like mentions, Calvin mentions his father and he like flicks a bell and it like makes a ringing noise. And I was like, are you trying to tell me something? But it winds up that he's just an Abercrombie and Fitch model who stumbled into someone's backyard and probably should have been arrested. That's what I'm going to say. All right. So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this movie. I love the message. I like Storm. I think Storm Reid is fantastic. I think Reese Witherspoon is fantastic. Chris Pine, I really liked. Meg's mother, I thought was great. But there's a lot of the pieces of the puzzle that don't seem to fit. And now I don't know if watching it as a younger person, I would have been like, I wouldn't have cared. I probably wouldn't have cared.
Yeah.
But that's not who I am right now. I'm an old man. I'm, you know, going to be dead soon. So like these things they do resonate like as issues in the film. And I think it kind of misses the mark a little bit because of all these little issues, because there's a fair amount of them. There's a fair amount of them, and it kind of I think it intrudes on the overall story. As great as Storm Reid is in the lead here, and as beautiful as I think the visuals are, and I do think that they're quite beautiful, and I like the way she makes the regular world has a little bit of a magic to it,
mm-hmm.
but then when you turn, it's really, you know, it's totally amplified. Like the misses really look out of place in the regular world, mm-hmm. and I like that. Then I like how when you see them in the other, you know, the tessered planets that we go to, they look like they fit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really great way of doing that. But, I, you know, two out of the three kids that are on this journey, I don't understand why they're there. I don't understand the Wallace character at all. And I think that they give him a little too much heavy lifting to do at the end. So I do think this movie has faults. I still would say go check it out, though. Because I think if you can kind of, you know, try to enter, you know, a youngness, you might overlook all these things. Because certainly a generation of folks did when they read the books. Because there's some stuff in these movies that don't make sense. And they're direct from the books. But enough about that. Courtney, what about you? Do you recommend Wrinkle in Time?
I would recommend it. I don't know that I had such a positive reaction as Melissa did maybe to the film. And I just think that comes from a place of, like you said, Pete, I mean, I'm an adult watching it. I read the book as an adult too. And I just think there's holes, but I really do think it comes from the source material. I think the source material is 100% the problem. I think maybe if you read this book and as a director, you go, man, there's some great world building in this book. I want to put that on the screen, but you don't consider and then make up for the flaws in the characters in the source material. That's a major problem. And I think that that is largely what happened. And those are the pieces that fall flat in the movie, because visually it's great. We have, you know, some great acting. We have cool costumes. And if you have little kids who aren't going to sit there and analyze every single little piece,
I think they'll eat it up.
Absolutely. Because it's beautiful. They're going to have characters that they identify with. There's a positive message for young girls, which I think is a really, really big deal, even if some of those positive messages are being given by a useless boy. I still think.
Yeah, right?
Just weird. Like, he doesn't need to be there complimenting her hair the whole movie. There's just no reason for it.
And as a white man, having a white character constantly comment on a black girl's hair was, like, uncomfortable to the fact that, like, I've seen that happen in real life, and the recipient of those comments is never happy.
I said that to Jim right after the movie. I was like, that is absolutely obnoxious. Like, Carl is even more useless in the movie. But anyway, I do think there's a lot to this film. If you have small kids, they're going to enjoy it. There's positive messages. I love a feel-good movie, and I think that that's largely what this was. So I would recommend it overall. But, you know, expect that you might find some faults with it as an adult.
Ryan, how about you?
Yeah, so to build off of what Courtney just said, I'm going to go down story time with Ryan Hole. Right before we went into the movie, I was in a bookstore, and I heard a woman on the phone. We'll say she was college age, and she was clearly giving, like, a male friend advice. And she was like, you need to, like, find a thing to compliment about her. Like, compliment her skin, or compliment her eyes, or compliment her hair. Just something so that she knows you're paying attention to the little things. And I'm sitting there going, that's not the greatest advice that I've ever heard. And then to walk into the movie and then hear this happening. And I'm like, and that's exactly why you don't do it, because she's going to look at you like that. Like, that's not that's not the appropriate response. And, you know, he kept hammering on it. And I think it was more to the fact of, yeah, let her, you know, when she finally sees it in herself, that's, you know, that's when she's happy about herself, not when he's complimenting her. It's just a weird way to get that message across. I love the fact that we modernize the family. They're not all, you know, you're totally white, you know, middle class, you know, upper middle class family. We're gonna, you know, make this an interracial family, which is much more commonplace today. It's something that it's coast to coast. And I know we have people in our group who love that, and it's fantastic, because that is who we are now. I think the messaging, especially for young women, is terrific. And, you know, as a white male, I took the same message away. You know, like, yeah, I can be, you know, I can be my own self. I don't have to have a male protagonist to tell me that I can go and do, you know, and I should be proud of myself. Great. Like, that storytelling element was wonderful. There are some beats missed in the character development. You know, you had the movie, you could have gone ahead and developed those characters a little bit more. You had the space to do that. Use the world building like we talked about, but develop the characters, give them a stronger sense of purpose. Don't cut out scenes where, you know, like where Michael Wallace makes a cognitive decision to look into the, you know, man with red eyes face to go into that consciousness so that he can go find their father. Don't take away the pieces that are working, which we did here. But overall, it's a good movie. It's worth checking out, especially if you have young kids.
Melissa.
Yeah, I agree with everything that's been said. You know, like, it had some issues, like Courtney was saying. I think it's the source material. I think if you take it as, like, a movie aimed at kids, like a lot of the Disney movies that we have sat through, you know, through our time here, I feel like kids will love it. I feel like if you take it as a kid's movie, it does, you know, probably better than most films that we've sat through. It actually has a moral that it gets across. And, you know, even if you are just there for your kid, you can enjoy the visuals. I think you can enjoy all the misses, because I think they're all really great. And some of the lines that they let Mindy Kaling use are fantastic. And yeah, I'm 100%.
Yes. On that line.
I didn't catch that. I'm sorry, Courtney. Say again.
Oh, shout out to Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah, that was a nice toss in there. I agree with you guys pretty much with everything you said. The only thing I'll say in addition is, you know, just because the source material may miss something here and there doesn't mean you can't fix that in the film. We've seen many, 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 many films that have improved upon the source material. And I look, this isn't an Alice in Wonderland tale, but I feel like we're getting a lot of these movies where it's a, you know, young girl going on an adventure into the unknown and this and that. And they all seem to be missing something. There's always just sort of like this little missed detail or something otherwise. And I think the last time that a movie of this structure, you know, worked was Spirited Away. And I don't know what it is that, you know, that was understood in that one, but there's some great moments in this. And again, I agree. I think if I was a young kid, I wouldn't care about any of the things I just went on about. I just wouldn't. It's the same reason that I can watch Neverending Story and not question why a very hard nipple statue is shooting eye beams at me. You know, that these are things that I'm not going to worry about, or that I'm going to be kind of confused about as a kid, maybe. Like, could you imagine if there was a hard nipple statue in this shooting eye beams at Storm Reid? Every parent would have been like, what is this nightmare that you have done to me?
Or what Mrs. What's It really what? Turned into? That's Mrs. what she turned it? Into in the book.
She's got abs.
She is like a male centaur, not really, but like...
We don't hire centaurs. Rainbow There's wings. A really great centaur skit on SNL with Christopher Walken, where he's interviewing, I think it's Chris Parnell as a centaur, and keeps asking him questions about what centaurs do. You should really check it out. It's a great skit. Yeah, I think this movie has its flaws, but I do think that if you have young kids, I think they're going to love it. I really do. And I don't know if they were supposed to explain things in a later film, but there's a lot of things that kind of needed explaining in here. That's really the biggest takeaway for me. So I think you should go check it out, but do know that this is not – it's not a perfect film by any means. It's got a lot of problems in it. But I do think that you'll find enjoyment out of it because the message is so good. Storm Reid is really fantastic. The visuals are great. The music is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. There are so many elements of this that are really, really, really good. There's some story and some acting bunches, though, that I think hold it back from transcending. It's good for kids. You know what I mean? Like, there's a big jump there. Plenty of movies that have done that, too.
Yeah, I do wonder
Pixar
if it
has made
was
a life out of it.
The time length. Because it's already a two-hour film. Like, I wonder if any more explanation would have lengthened it to the point where it wouldn't have been enjoyable for kids. Like, it would have been
too
long.
Well, if you take the Calvin character out, you save yourself about 15 minutes right there, and then you can fill it in with some parts that are maybe more important to the plot. I think you could have eliminated his character.
I think so too, but there might have been a thing that they wanted to keep with the threes, because then you have the three misses, and I don't know.
The rule
or just
three.
Develop his character better. Just give him a reason to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give him a reason to be. All right, guys. Well, hey, that's this week's show. Next week's show is going to be a different show. And Melissa has some reviews to read from the iTunes. Now, how this works is how you can really – one of the great ways to help this show is to simply go on iTunes, give a 5-star review. And if you want to write something silly like what can we say this week? Trains and planes may float like brains, but Wrinkle in Time has but one. That could be a review. I don't know. It sort of rhymed and made sense. So if you want to write that as your 5-star review, Melissa will then read that on the show or whatever review. 5 stars only. Not a bunch of savages here. Melissa will read your review as she's about to right now. Melissa, read some reviews.
Okay, I'm going to read this one from TheaterKid17. This podcast freaking rocks. Have you ever wanted to experience riding a dinosaur across a beautiful beach while simultaneously winning a laser sword battle?
Yes.
Listen to this podcast.
Okay.
Because the experience the DMH crew gives its listeners is even better. Want to hear the latest Disney news? They'll tell you. Want to scream senselessly at your car stereo while they make insane choices in their bracket episodes? You can do that too.
I blame Ryan.
Even better, has your love of Disney distanced you from loved ones? Abandon your family. You'll find better people in the DMH community. Disney Magic Hour, rarely an hour, always magical, mostly about Disney. For real though, Pete, Melissa, Ryan, Brian, Jennifer, Courtney, Chris, Chelsea, KJ, Shaunine, them's good people.
Thank you so much.
That's good.
And I do need one of our artist friends to take the laser sword dinosaur beach motif and create that for us. I need that to happen.
That would be good.
That would be something. That would be appreciated.
I also have another one here. 5 stars from G Trent 88. Sassafras Infinity War.
Yeah, boy.
Awesome podcast.
Yeah. Yes. Someone's listening to the endings.
And finally, we have another one from Elvin T. Sassafras Infinity Wars.
I know that name.
Yes. The first line should be read using Don LaFontaine's voice. I don't know how to do that, so do you want to do that?
No, go ahead.
Okay. In a world full of Disney-related podcasts,
he's
DMH...
the movie guy. You know? In a world full...
I asked you if you wanted to do it. You did.
You should do it. That would be funnier if you did it.
In a world full of Disney-related podcasts, DMH stands head and shoulders above the rest.
See? That's good.
Okay. The DMH crew splits its focus between park-related news and history and reviewing Disney, Pixar, Marvel, and Lucasfilm theatrical releases, both past and present. They offer a balanced view of Disney without the snark of a lot of other shows seem to thrive on. Their opinions, a wonderful sense of camaraderie and humor make it a fun listen every week. Highly recommended.
Thank you so much, Elvin.
Awesome.
I know who you are, sir. Actually, speaking of Star Wars-y things, me and Ryan are going to find time this week to do a Facebook Live interaction on the DMH page, talking about Rebels. Mm-hmm. The series that is now wrapped up. And that will be an example of everything being tied up quite nicely. So we're going to do that later this week. We're not really too sure what day we'll talk about that when we're done with the show. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. I hope you had a good time. I hope that you go out and enjoy a movie or two, you know, or three or four. I don't know. Depends on how much free time you have. Next week, as I said, will be a different episode. It will not be this episode. It's going to be different. There's going to be a different number. There's going to be different words spoken. It will not be the same. So check us out next week, because we got a thing. Think you guys will like it. Not gonna say it yet, because it didn't happen. Happening tomorrow. But till then, this episode of Disney Magic Hour has been brought to you by MEI Travel. For all your vacation planning needs, for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, traveling anywhere around the globe, visit the experts over at meitravel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. Right now, you're listening to There You Are. You can find this track and more over at soundcloud.com/pogomix. We are lastgenpodcast.com on the Twitter. We are at Diz Magic Hour Pod, at D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. Facebook, Disney Magic Hour. Add yourself, add your friends. It's a great little community we got over there. You can find this show on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. I still don't understand why I keep saying that. And Melissa, where's Instagram and the Patreon?
Instagram is at Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And if you head over to patreon.com/DisneyMagicHour, you can find ways to support the show there.
And Ryan, where can everyone find the Main Street Gazette?
At mainstgazette.com, mainstgazette on Twitter or Instagram. And you search for Main Street Gazette on Facebook and you'll find the page.
And Courtney, if people want to read about J. Thaddeus J. Toad? Saying it backwards. Mr. Toad, where would they find you and the DMH Book Club?
You will find us on Facebook at DMH Book Club, and Melissa and I will be going live this week on Thursday to discuss chapters 4 through 6 of The Wind in the Willows, so please join us there.
Which one is it? Is Thaddeus J or J Thaddeus?
J Thaddeus.
J Thaddeus. God, couldn't remember.
It's just Toad.
Yeah. It's just, in the movie, it's J Thaddeus Toad.
Yes, he's Esquire, if I was up to me. Say goodnight, Melissa.
Okay, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Courtney.
Good night, Courtney.
Say goodnight, Ryan.
Good night, Ryan.
Good night, Pete. And say goodnight, Pogo.